Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga und läuft dann in Keeper Freisel rein. Iredale vollendet, 4:0.
Beste. Ball kommt in die Mitte und zu Kleindienst! Kleindienst!
Goethe. Linke Seite ist blank, vielleicht. Ja, vielleicht! Vielleicht zieht er ihn in Salazar.
Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. On today's edition we'll be discussing all of the action from a very entertaining match day 29. There were some upsets, which is what you'd come to expect from the Zweite Bundesliga, late goal drama, and it's fair to say we have an intense relegation battle from here until the rest of the season. Only one team in that relegation battle managed to win on the weekend. We'll talk about them in Group 2. We have a lot to cover. Thank you for your patience. I was planning on trying to do it Sunday night. But if you keep up to date with my socials, I was in Leverkusen. And what an unbelievable... I know this is not Zweite Bundesliga, but it was a hell of an experience to be there, to see them win the first ever Bundesliga title, and it was just an incredible moment personally. But anyway, enough about gushing about what happened with Leverkusen. Let's talk about what happened in the Zweite Bundesliga on match day 29, and we're going to start at the Milan Tor. St. Pauli hosted Elversberg. Now, St. Pauli headed into the match day top of the pile. Things were looking good for Pauli. You know, they would feel confident against an Elversberg side that's been patchy of late. Not entirely out of the relegation battle, but in a good position to avoid. But an important game for both teams, and St. Pauli were okay. I thought defensively they were very lackluster. They got opened up quite easily from Elversberg. And Elversberg had their chances early on to take the lead, if not for some pretty good goalkeeping from Nikolai Vasil. They could have opened the scoring early, whether it was through Varna, who was excellent in the game. We'll talk about him in a moment. But Pauli got the opening goal. It's an excellent set piece. So this is definitely a training ground maneuver where they had two players at the front post, and as the ball comes in, they move away, and Elversberg were playing a bit of a man-to-man set. And Johannes Eggestein was able to get into the space. Easy finish, 1-0. They took that at the break. But Elversberg, who I thought were really good in the game, especially in the transition moments, that's where they really caught St. Pauli in all sorts of trouble. And they got their opening goal 6 minutes into the second half through Maurice Neubauer. But then St. Pauli got the go-ahead goal on 69 minutes through Marcel Hartl. He's now got 16 goals. But then, really, a surprise for a lot of people is that St. Pauli absolutely, in many ways, collapsed. And they gave up 3 goals in the space of 13 minutes, thanks to Joseph Boyambo, Paul Varner, and Hugo Vandermeersch. All of them were sort of in transition. The third, I would say the goal scored from, I think it was Vandermeersch. Like they stay onside, a good chip ball to Schnellbacher, and then he plays Vandermeersch across. So what was 2-1 at 69 becomes 4-2 at 83. Irvine gets a goal late to make it 3-4, and there's the potential that it could get a little bit interesting. They can't find an equalising goal, and they succumb to a rare loss at the Milan Tor. It's been a fortress for them all season, so much so that it is their first loss at home this season. The other three have been away from home: at Magdeburg, at Schalke, and last weekend, or the previous weekend, in Karlsruhe. But there was enough to be worried defensively. You know, Elversberg have really struggled of late. You know, they entered the match day one win in the last five. We know they're a very good goal scoring team. Defensively, they've shown inconsistencies. But it was just they were super effective in the final third. They looked really dangerous. The numbers do back that up. I mean, from 14 shots on goal, 10 of them were on target. XG of 2.79. You know, they didn't have as much of the ball. They had 30%, which was in the bottom three in terms of teams that had ball possession over match day 29. But what they did with the ball, there's a lot more substance with what they produced. And it's a frustrating loss for St. Pauli. It's now two on the bounce. They've got a massive game in Hanover on the weekend, which is not going to be easy. You know, and this is the first, for mine, the first real challenge that we've seen for Fabian Hertzler. You know, it's the first time this season they've had back-to-back defeats. And yeah, you know, they've got an intro. Like their last five games, they play three teams that are fighting to avoid relegation in Hansa Rostock on match day 31, Osnabrück, and then they end the season in Wiesbaden. But they also face two sides that are trying to keep in touch with Fortuna Düsseldorf for the playoff. So, you know, in all sports, you say there's no such thing as an easy game. And, you know, they play teams that have got something to play for. It's going to be a really big challenge for them whether they can get over the hump against Hanover. They've got Hamburg in 3 weeks' time in the derby on a Friday night at the Volksparkstadion. And that's going to be... it's going to be tough. So we'll see what they can bring to the table. It is definitely... this will be a good test of how good Fabian Hertzler can problem solve after, you know, some adverse situation. But it's quite incredible to think that they've lost out of the four defeats they've had all season, three of them are not in the top half. Yeah, so it's been quite an incredible surprise. For Elversberg, look, they're on what, 39 points. Given the results that happened on the match day, they're, what, 8 points clear of Hansa with five to play. They're in pretty good shape, it has to be said, to avoid being in that playoff spot. They're 10 points ahead of Kaiserslautern. Look, they've got Schalke on the weekend, who they beat in the Hinrunde. Schalke just not as strong away from home. Then they've got Paderborn you know, Paderborn is going to be a really good test for them as well. I think, you know, they're not going through their best form at the moment. But that's not to say that they can't fix that going forward. I think they're in a good... look, I think they've done enough. But a question, I guess, of whether they can end on a high. I think 10th place is a pretty good spot for them at the moment. I would say they're better than Nürnberg. They're better than all the teams that are ahead of them. Could they sneak into the top half? I think if they were able to do that, it would conclude a pretty exceptional season for what is a relatively young side. Some really good young talented players, and they definitely showed that in this game. So yeah, Schalke, Paderborn, and Hertha are the next three. Then they end with Nürnberg and Karlsruhe. So should be fascinating. Let's talk about the team who's now top of the Zweite Bundesliga. That's Holstein Kiel. They played bottom place side Osnabrück on Saturday afternoon. This one was a pretty clear-cut result, 4-0 for Kiel. Goals from Steven Skrzybski, an absolute beauty from Philip Zander from distance, Timo Becker, who is actually had a really good season for Kiel. He's got six goals playing as a right-sided centre-back, but he gets forward quite a lot. He's very aggressive. He can also play wing-back. He's had a great year. Alexander Bernhardsen got on the score sheet as well. It's his third goal this season, 2-2 for him. The review of this game really is that, you know, Kiel were pretty much in control for the first half. They scored early. They made it very hard for Osnabrück to really make any inroads. And even though Osnabrück started the second half the better, they had a couple of good chances. We saw Kwasi Riet play against the side that he's currently on loan from, make a rare appearance. And, you know, it's tough for Osnabrück. I think if the focus is on Osnabrück, the good thing for them is that excluding Braunschweig and Magdeburg, everyone else around them lost. So they're still in the hunt. I think they're 5 points behind Kaiserslautern, 7 points behind Hansa. Like, it's not inconceivable, but it is very unlikely. And it becomes very difficult, of course, when you have to rely on other teams to get results for you, you know, in your favor. So, yeah, look, it doesn't bode well for VfL. They were pretty defeated pretty early in this game. You know, it's hard to really pencil in anyone who had a strong performance for Uwe Koschen outside. But look, they have something that they can improve on. But more importantly, they've got two games coming up against sides that are also in this relegation battle in Eintracht Braunschweig and Magdeburg. If they take, like, and you know, these are all hypotheticals. They take maximum points, they're back in the game. They're absolutely back in the game. We have, I think, a really exciting match day 30, where a bunch of the teams are playing each other in the relegation zone, which is, actually, I think it's this weekend, sorry. So Wiesbaden have got Kaiserslautern, Osnabrück have Eintracht Braunschweig, Hansa and Magdeburg are playing together. Like, massive. Like, match day this coming weekend is huge in the fight for relegation. So, if they can take points, they're back in the game. I feel if they lose to Braunschweig, it will just be extremely hard, even if results go their way. Because their last three games, home to Schalke, they'll feel like a chance. St. Pauli, that's difficult. And then home to Hertha. So, like, three of the last five are at home. Hertha away just aren't as strong as Hertha at home. If they were ending the season at the Olympiastadion, I'd be concerned. And even though they got a point when they travelled to Berlin in December, you know. So, look, it's going to be tricky. I would say, as we've said quite often this season, don't give up the first goal to Braunschweig. Otherwise, you've got no chance recently. So, yeah, big test for Osnabrück. For Kiel, fantastic. Again, just dominant. It's the ninth time this season they've scored three or more goals. It's also in... They've won five on the bounce. And in each of those five games, they've kept a clean sheet. You could not ask for a better return. And look, they've had to play different players. You know, they've got Ivizic, they got Patrick Erosz, they got Timo Becker playing as that defensive three at the moment. Carl Johansson came on at half time to play. I think they moved. That's probably what allowed Becker to get forward. But, you know, this team continues to find a way to get results through adversity. And look, they're in a really good spot. If you look at the table, the most important part of the table is that they're 9 points clear of Hamburg. They're only 6 points clear of Fortuna Düsseldorf, who have also won five on the bounce. We'll talk about them in a second. So, yeah, they're doing everything right. One of the best offenses in the league. And, there's really not much more I can add to it. But, look, if you're a Kiel fan, you're in luck. Four of the last five games are World Feed games. They've got Hamburg, of course, on Saturday night, which they look to continue and compound the misery on Haasfeld, as they've done for the last five and a half seasons in the Zweite Bundesliga. Then they've got home game against Kaiserslautern, then Wiesbaden, Fortuna Düsseldorf, and Hanover. Remember last time they were in Hanover, Finn Bartels scored twice and they pummeled them 5-1. So wouldn't that be the way to end the season? But look, they could wrap up promotion against Fortuna Düsseldorf on that top game, but on match day 33. So yeah, they're in great shape. It's all looking good for them so far, and yeah, they've all the momentum is with Holstein Kiel. Our final game of Group 1 brings us to the Britta Arena, Wien Wiesbaden hosted Fortuna Düsseldorf. Another one of those games where you've got a team trying to avoid relegation and a team pushing for promotion. Look, this game was difficult for Wiesbaden, and it got really hard once they conceded the goal in 13 minutes to Shinta Appelkamp, which, by the way, fantastic goal. Great to see him back in the starting 11. And look, he can play a real part in their quest for whether it's the playoff or full-blown promotion. Fantastic goal. I loved it. Then Lee Hyun-ju got sent off for a red card. It's really hard to dispute it. I know that it looks even worse when you slow it down. But he's late, studs up, and into the back of the calf. I just, like, in that calf Achilles area, it's just, it's really, really hard to not give that as a red card. And I know Kalczynski was really upset, and I think he got a yellow card as well for remonstrating with the referee in the game. But it was a red card. It just simply was. And Timo Gerrish was well within his right to assess the situation and provide a straight red. Look, they made some changes. They in the second half, Eastbaden brought a bit more pace on with Bennett and Iredale. And they had a period, like a very small period, where they looked like they could snatch an equaliser. But then it was cooked just after the hour mark when Isak Johannesson got his third goal of the campaign as well. And from there, really, it was just a controlled game for Fortuna Düsseldorf, who, look at it, it was a good week for them. They took care of business. They had some results go their way as well. And, you know, 5 wins in a row for them. And at the very least, as things stand, it definitely looks like they're going to be in the top 3. Was talking with a few people on Thursday about what the top 3 would look like, and I just, unless something drastic happens, I can't see a situation where the top 3, Kiel, St. Pauli and Fortuna Düsseldorf, isn't the top 3 at the end of the season. It's not to say things can't change, like, you know, maybe St. Pauli continues the free fall, or Hamburg gets it together, you know, Hanover or Hertha goes on an improbable run. Like, these things can change, but it's really hard to say that it won't stay as the status quo. It was a very professional performance. It was, you know, Appelkamp was fantastic. He had the goal, and then he assisted the second goal of the game. But yeah, they, you know, considering they're missing Ayo Tanaka with injury. But he could be back next week. There's a chance that he could play the game against Greuther Fürth on Saturday afternoon, but we'll wait and see on that. But yeah, pretty confident performance, although Oberdorf and Siebert were controlled. But yeah, it was a pretty resounding result in the end. I think they took the 2 goals, and they weren't exactly looking to add a third. They were more or less happy to sit on the lead. So yeah, the next 3 got Fürth at Schalke, which is a world feed game, and then Nürnberg. Like, they can easily take 9 points here. Fürth, we'll talk about them in Group 3. Yeah, I guess Schalke at home is a different beast, and Nürnberg are sort of the wheels are starting to fall off there. So, but their big test will be Kiel, the penultimate match day, and then home to Magdeburg. So, look, you know, they play, what, 3 teams that are in the bottom half, Fürth and 9th, and then Kiel is the tough one. So, like, they realistically, they could take upwards of 10 points and really put the pressure on St. Pauli and Kiel. So, very much game on. For Wiesbaden, they've had a pretty miserable run. It's now 4 consecutive defeats for them, and they are very much entrenched in the relegation battle. It's been a very turbulent time. Just the inability to score goals has been problematic. They go behind early in a lot of games. It certainly felt over the last few weeks, and it's just it's really hard to understand. So like, if you were to take the current table as the Rook Runda table, they've won twice in 2024. Two wins, seven defeats, only 9 points. One of the worst attacks in the league. Defensively, they're okay. They're not as strong as they were in the Hinrunda. So, their next few games are quite massive. They've got games with Kaiserslautern on Saturday, Greuther Fürth the following week, and then Kiel, which is a World Feed game, on the 5th. Then ending the season with Braunschweig away and then St. Pauli at home. Tough games all round. But that game on Saturday is going to be massive in terms of the relegation battle. Let's take our first break. And on the other side, we'll talk about our Group 2 games starting at the MDCC Arena in Magdeburg. It's Magdeburg against HSV. Two teams in desperate need of victory on match day 29 were HSV and, of course, Magdeburg. A game of real importance for both sides. Magdeburg are being dragged into the relegation battle, and now it would be fair to say they are firmly in there. HSV losing touch with Fortuna Düsseldorf. They desperately needed to get a win. Well, it all sort of turned pear-shaped midway through the first half when Guillermo Ramos fouled Lucas Schuler in the box in what would have been a 1v1. The referee, Dr. Robert Kamka, gave Ramos a straight red card. It was a decision that has come under a lot of contention, but I believe this is an IFAB rule, not a DFB legislated decision. So it's a tough one because there seems to be minimal contact. And to be honest, having watched enough of Lucas Schuler, and he showed this throughout the game, I don't think he would have scored the one-on-one chance with Matira. So, yeah, Ramos took a chance. He was punished for it, and Mohamed El Ankouri scored Magdeburg's first goal since March. So, a relief for them. And they couldn't believe their luck because during stoppage time, they won another penalty. This time it was Rice and Rab getting in a tangle with Bell, referee called penalty, and El Ankouri scoring that one. Both times Rab went the right way. In fact, the second one he got a good palm on, but it wasn't enough to deny. HSV were much better in the second half, and they got the first goal in 68 minutes through Sebastian Schonlau. Real nice little turn and shoot effort from inside the box. And then, Magdeburg just panicked. We know they're really not strong defensively. I think that's been something we've known for a long time, that we've covered the league. And they just panicked. The pressure of a 10-man Hamburg was too much in the end. Rice's cross was deflected. It looped to the back post, and then Jonas Meffert was able to head home. And from a goalkeeping standpoint for Ryman, I'd be filthy that I'd give up a goal like that, in the sense that he misjudged it, and it's something that was it's hard to judge the deflections because you don't know where the ball's going to drop. And he just misreads it. He should never give up that goal, to be honest. But a result for Hamburg. They get a point. It's a good character result. They've really struggled, and I don't believe, based on chats with people who support HSV, that they're really invested in this Stefan Baumgart experiment. You knew it was going to take time. They haven't been particularly world-beating, which is fair enough. But they are unbeaten in their last four. I mean, that's a positive. Something they can take going forward. Their run home is quite tricky. Kiel on Saturday is at night, a team they haven't beaten in the Zweite Bundesliga. Braunschweig and then St. Pauli at home on a Friday night. Then it's Paderborn, and then they've got Nürnberg at home to end the season. I thought Hamburg were pretty they were okay in this game. When they had to go and do something, they looked more likely to get a result. The first half was quite tricky. It took them a while to adjust to playing with 10 men. They looked a bit rushed. Magdeburg had chances in the first half to really put the game out of reach. But once it adjusted and Hamburg really got on top, you felt that Magdeburg looked very vulnerable. And this defense was just, as it's been all season. It just couldn't handle the intensity, couldn't handle the heat. And what was meant to be a day of celebration, they had this the Zondertroiket, which was to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Cup Winners' Cup triumph in from 1974. But yeah, it's really hard to know where Magdeburg are at, because they just can't, for whatever reason, learn from their mistakes defensively. And every week they do the same things. And here against the 10-man Hamburg, now Hamburg are a much better team than they are the Magdeburg, but there should have never been a situation where they just threw it away. They threw the game away. And they had chances to make it 3-1 or 3-0. And yeah, it's interesting. Like, you talk about whether teams are built for the relegation battle. You know, is Magdeburg a team really built for the battle? I don't know. I thought there were going to be a team that was going to develop and progress further up the table. That was my feeling entering the season. And I think it's really difficult to point at what this team is, like what the direction they want to, where they want to go. And yeah, it's going to be really difficult. I mean, their next three games are so big, because they're all against teams that are in the relegation zone in the battle. Rostock, Osnabrück, Kaiserslautern. These games, all three are season defining. If they cannot pick up enough points, it's going to go down to the wire. You won't want to travel to Düsseldorf on the final match day trying to survive. So these next 3 weeks will define their season, in my opinion. And, you know, it probably doesn't get any bigger than the than Rostock on Sunday afternoon, followed by the top game against Kaiserslautern, where all eyes will be watching you. And there's nowhere to hide. So yeah, they have a big one. I guess a final word on Hamburg. Fortuna Düsseldorf winning really didn't help them, as the margin is now much bigger than it was previously. What they do from here is difficult. It feels like another lost season. And the craziest thing is, in the six seasons they've been in the Zweite Bundesliga, they haven't finished lower than fourth. if it was in the Bundesliga, you know, it would be magical. But that's not what they're here. They're not here to finish fourth. They're here to gain promotion. And it seems like there's going to be a difficult summer for Hamburg. There's two more things on them. And I don't mean to be disrespectful to Jonas Bold, but we got to teach him how to celebrate a goal. Man looked really stiff out there. Like, I love that he showed his emotions after the 2-2, because it was an important goal for the club, given where the season was starting to sort of go away from them. But going to need him to loosen up a little bit. He looked a little stiff out there, and we're going to have to loosen him up a little bit. But I can understand being tight, given it's been a tough run for Haasfeld. Important result for them, but tough games coming up, like the next stretch, which luckily the travel is not too far for them, but it's, yeah, they're gonna, having to rely on other teams to lose is a recipe for disaster. Let's talk about the Niedersachsen Derby or Dust Duel, Eintracht Braunschweig against Hanover. This game ended goalless. This game, there are a few things that define the game, and not a lot of it was really football-wise. I mean, I thought Hanover were largely the more likely a team to score. I thought their chances were just marginally better. They had that great chance, the 1-on-1 late in the game through Lars Gindorf, who his effort, his 1-on-1 was saved by Ron Torben Hoffman, who had a pretty strong game again to keep the clean sheet. Off the pitch, lots of pyro, as you would expect from a Zweite Bundesliga, a derby game, or a Zweite Bundesliga game. So that was cool. There was like a picture of Hanover Hood at the Hanover end. The guest block where they just a cloud of green pyro just engulfed that whole half of the pitch. Very eerie, sort of like. It's like that episode of The Simpsons where it's like one of the old original Treehouse of Horror episodes where the green smoke seeps through the window seals and it turns your skin inside out. It's similar to that. So very eerie stuff. It was a physical game, unsurprisingly. It was cagey. Chances were at a premium, and to be fair, there wasn't a lot of high quality chances throughout the game, except the Gindorf one I thought was the best of the lot. Helgerson had a chance late, but the angle was pretty poor, and Zila maneuvered that quite well. The biggest issue, I think the biggest talking point from this game was the incident involving Hasan Kurece and teammate Robert Ivanov. So two guys going for the ball, lack of communication, it would be fair to say, they clash heads. Kurece seems okay, Ivanov not so much. It's disappointing that because we haven't had to talk about this for quite a while, which is great, because the less we have to talk about it, the better. But he never looked like he should have played on after that incident. He clearly looked in a pretty bad way, and concussion can come in many different forms. It can happen immediately. There's delayed concussion. The unfortunate thing about football is that you don't really get an opportunity to properly assess someone through a protocol. As I've mentioned on this podcast several years, in the AFL, the Aussie rules, you know, my sport, one of my sports in Australia, they have concussion protocol where a player has to sit out for 20 minutes where they assess the damage or the what has happened, and then they are either cleared or they're not cleared to continue playing. Sometimes it's clear and obvious that they're not okay, so they get ruled out pretty quickly. Some teams take precautionary action and just rule them out just to protect them, knowing that they will miss the next game because there's a 9-day turnaround for when a player misses with a concussion. Now, you remember, like in football, there's, you head of the ball quite a lot, so your brain is taking quite a beating anyway through those kinds of duels. And it's obviously a lot worse when it's head-to-head. But the fact that he kept playing for a little while longer before being subbed out on just before half time suggests that there's still a bit of an issue, and like there's not an easy fix, because obviously once you sub someone out, you sub them out. That's it. They can't come back. It's not like in AFL or rugby where there's interchange. So it's a really difficult line to toe. But when we talk about player safety, and it's a serious issue, you know, why not err on the side of caution? A player will always tell you that they want to play the game, regardless of what's happened. Someone's run through them and they still want, oh, I'm good, coach, keep me in the game. But that's because that's the competitive genes of once you cross the white line, you focus in and your goal is to play the game. But is it really serious enough that you have to keep playing? it's a game after all. Like, I love football. We all love football who listens to the podcast, you know. But it's not life or death, you know. Do you want to harm your quality of life later on just because you could play a 15 extra minutes? Yeah, we get so caught up in the short-term thinking that, you know, these sorts of incidents really crop up long-term. So hopefully Ivanov is okay, Robert's okay, first and foremost, and that Braunschweiger taking steps to ease him back in, but giving him enough time to recover, because, you know, it seemed like a pretty decent head clash. And, you know, I understand Braunschweiger in a relegation battle, and every point is critical, and, you know, Robert is an important part of their defensive setup. But I think him missing a game is far better than him missing, say, the rest of the season, because the damage was far more severe, or the injury was far more severe, because he kept playing. So, you know, that's worth thinking about. Their run home is interesting. They also play three of the relegation battlers in Osnabrück, Wiesbaden, and they end the season in Kaiserslautern. In between, they've got a game against Hamburg and Fürth. Tough. It's going to be fascinating. Obviously, this coming weekend, you've got three games that feature the relegation teams, which will be really exciting. And every point counts from here on out. They've got a better goal difference than Rostock, so that's why they're the last team that's safe at the moment. But they will be the three games that they can take the points off. The Hamburg game will be tricky. There goes, of course, my email. And Fürth's 50-50, to be honest. I think they could get a result there. So I think Braunschweiger are in a better position than some of the other teams at the moment. But they can ill afford to go behind first. We've seen throughout the season, and I've harped up on it, but it's the easiest, it's probably the simplest cue to find with them. They concede first. It's really hard for them to get back into the game. They score first. Things look good. So we'll see how that goes. For Hanover, they've got three of the last five games are World Feed games, starting with the game against St. Pauli at home, which is a massive game. They could really throw the cat amongst the pigeons if they can get a result against St. Pauli. Even though they've won one of their last five games, they're unbeaten in that stretch, Hanover. Then they're away at Hertha, Paderborn, Karlsruhe, and then they end the season at home against Kiel. That's a World Feed game. And that would be some serious atonement from what happened last time out. And lastly, our final Group 2 game brings us to the Feltens Arena. It's Schalke against Nürnberg. I was at this game, fortunately enough, and atmosphere-wise, it was spectacular. I was right near the Nürnberg fans, and they really brought some good sound, good volume to the friendship game. There wasn't any choreo, which I suppose fair enough given the situation of where Schalke were at, but yeah, like, the first half was just, it was weird because, like, Schalke were just the better team for mine, and they were just taking shooting practice at Karl Klaus. And Carol Gerrits even said that post-game, like, they were really good in the first half, and they probably should have been two or three goals up. That's paraphrasing the last bit. But they should have been two or three goals up. You know, Kinnan Karaman gets the goal just before half-time, and that was a deserved goal. Like, they were better. The only thing Nürnberg did really well was the quick sort of counter-attack. And there was often times they would get deep to the box and then they'd lose the ball. So, like, one thing that became very noticeable is that Nürnberg would play a lot on the left-hand side, and they would leave Benjamin Goller, who's got quite a bit of pace, and they left him on an island with Derry John Merkin. And Merkin's pretty quick himself, and they did this early on because Merkin picked up a yellow card very early on in the piece. And And like that was like I thought that wasn't a bad strategy, given that if you can get him sent off, you've got a game's in your favor at that point. You've got the numerical advantage. But credit to the Schalke defenses, we know the spine of the team is incredibly slow. And yeah, it was quite interesting that they didn't go up the spine enough. It was a bit of a surprise. But so 1-0 at the break. The second half, Nürnberg were definitely a lot better. They had their chances. Marius Müller had like this incredible save, which was late in the game. He's fantastic. He's been so good for them throughout the season, which is not a surprise. I would argue he's probably been Schalke's best player this season. But anyway, so like Schalke had to be a bit more opportunistic in the second half. They get the goal. It was an initial shot that was saved. And then Paul Seguin just laced it. And Klaus just couldn't do anything about it. So 2-0 was the final score. And look, there was a lot happened off the pitch as well. So the eagle eyes of whoever was capturing it caught Kiel players Steven Skrzybski and Timo Becker in the Nordkurver. That's really cool. I mean, both guys played at Schalke. Becker came through the academy system. And so that's cool. Like, you love that. Like, I don't know how Kiel would have felt about it, but, you know, they'd played the game previously and then in the afternoon, and they made their way to watch Schalke play. So that was cool. It was interesting to see Christian Fiel so critical of Can Özcan. Now, Özcan didn't have a great game, admittedly. Really struggled to create, but he was very critical of his performance. It's unusual. We know Özcan's going to Frankfurt next season, and you know he's a super talent. It just wasn't the kind of game that was built for him. But it was interesting after the game, taking the tram back to Gelsenkirchen Hauptbahnhof, and chatting with some Nürnberg fans. And I think the consensus is really clear on them. There's no direction of what this team is, short, long term. I thought Karl Klaus was one of their better players, and if it wasn't for him in the first half, the game would have been well out of reach. Some of them disagreed, and that's fine. But we can see what we see in that first half. It was a lot. It shouldn't have been as close. They have a bit of a goalkeeping problem. There's a talk that maybe next season Jan Rijkaard could be the number one next season. I would like to see him at least have a look. It's worth a look, because I don't think Matenia will be there. And Klaus, we're a bit unsure on. But I guess there's got to be enough talk about Dieter Hecking, because this is his fourth season as the sporting director. And third or fourth season? Look, frankly, this team, it's really hard to identify. And if it wasn't for guys like Can Özcan, guys like Finn Jeltsch, really booming on the scene, what is this team wanting to achieve? What is the direction they want to go in? And how can you really identify what this team is trying to be? Like, where do they see themselves in the short, medium, and long term? Because if you look at the team, you look at the coach, and nothing really gels. There's no match. There's no real, no synergy. Like, you just don't feel good about what the team is. And even though they sit on 37 points, we say the cutoff's 38 to survive. They've lost three of the last four games. And the talk at the post game was that they're in the relegation fight now, Like, they're back in it. Despite, you know, everything that's gone on, they feel like they're back in it. I would say the other thing is that... I know this is meant to be a fan friendship game, but it's been more than a decade since Nürnberg actually beat Schalke. Now, they haven't played often enough because they've been in different divisions. Once, you know, Nürnberg more so in the second division, and now recently Schalke more so. But since they've played each other in the Zweite Bundesliga, all four times Schalke have won, and the games in Gelsenkirchen aren't as close as the ones at the Max Morlock Stadion. So I know that there were some fans who are kind of sick of the fan friendship because they always seem to lose. But yeah, that's not neither here nor there. But it's going to be tough. You know, they got Paderborn, Karlsruhe, Fortuna Düsseldorf, Elversberg, and Hamburg are the last five. There are players who are playing probably for their future. Some who might be playing for a transfer away. I was like for a team that had 18. Granted, they had 18 shots on goal on Saturday night, and to be honest, you wouldn't have known it because it didn't feel like they had 18 shots. Didn't like. It just they felt so harmless throughout the game that nothing. Like, it's really hard to speak well about what Nürnberg did. It just was very confusing. They looked unbalanced, and I could totally understand fans being really upset that, you know, there needs to be maybe more change, but we'll have to see what happens. On the Schalke side of things, an important win, obviously. Magnified because everyone else around them didn't win. They have some big games coming up. The home games you feel confident about. Like, they were really good in the first half. I thought Yusuf Kabadaya was great. I thought his intensity on the game was exactly the level that he needs to be playing at. If he can play at that level every week. Like, I get it. The team is not perfect. And I think there's a great understanding about that. But when they bring that intensity, they bring the heat, the desire, yeah, they could. You know, it's almost infuriating because if you look, you've got a guy like Carol Gerrards, and I know I've been very hot and cold on how I feel about him. It's not exclusive to him. It's more the team is just not built for what he wants to do. Much like Nürnberg is quite similar. And this is why, should Schalke survive, Mark Wilmots has a pretty big task of building a squad that works to what Gerrards' strengths are as a coach. Because I actually, you know, after a lot of assessment and soul searching, he's a good coach and his resume shows that. And he could easily be coaching in the Bundesliga. I genuinely feel that way. So I guess you look at things and now you have to wonder what it will be. You know, the next five games are massive. You got Elversberg away, Fortuna Düsseldorf in the top game. But the last three games, you got Osnabrück away. They could be relegated by the time they play that game. Hansa at home, which you want to atone for that 3-4 a couple of seasons ago. And then Fürth away. So look, they're on 35 points. We say 38 is the cutoff. This season feels like maybe a little bit abnormal. If they get a... Look, 5 points in their next five should be enough. It should be enough. But can they win away from home? It's been their Achilles heel all season. They've won twice away from home. Can they win? They showed fight against Hanover. Can they show this against Elversberg on Friday night? We'll wait and see. Let's take our final break. And on the other side, we'll discuss our final three games of Match Day 29, starting at the Olympiastadion when Hertha hosted Hansa Rostock. Following their win against Wien Wiesbaden last time out, Hansa Rostock were hoping to win once again when they made the journey to the capital to take on Hertha BSC. Hansa brought 20,000 fans to the Olympiastadion, and with an overall crowd of what I think it was like 62, just over 62,000 fans. Lots of optimism in the air, but that quickly became despair. Hertha dispatching them by 4-0 in a pretty competent display, a brace from Pauko Dardai, Fabian Riiza, and a late goal from Haris Tabakovic, his 19th of the season, which means he is currently the Zweite Bundesliga's top goal scorer. It means that Hertha are now comfortably in 6th place in the standings, and winners of 3 of their last 5 games, a point behind Hannover. They are still 8 points adrift of Fortuna Düsseldorf, but at least they are setting themselves up to have a good, strong finish to end the season. There's been a lot of talk about what the future looks like for Hertha. Rumours that previously at Legia Warsaw, but also Kaiserslautern and 1860 Munich, Kostas Runjic has been in discussions about potentially replacing Paul Dardai at the end of the season. It does seem like Dardai is not going to be the next season. I don't know the ins or outs, but there's definitely been a lot more rumour talk about him being out in the summer. One of his sons, Benzer, joined Wolfsburg last week. So there's no correlation there, you know, professionals trying to get games. But yeah, look, it was a pretty dominant, it was a pretty comfortable display for Hertha. Look, they did give up a couple of decent chances in the game, and Tjaak Ernst, who was back between the pipes, looked pretty strong. I don't think there was much you could argue about his performance. Kept the clean sheet. But yeah, I thought Hertha were always in control. It never felt as if like the game was out of reach. There wasn't exactly like a lot of phases where Hansa were really dominant. You know, Hansa were okay outside of, you know, from halftime to about the 3rd goal, and then from there they kind of shut up shop, acknowledged the game was done, and took the L and moved on. And you know, it becomes a missed opportunity again for Rostock, because had they got a result, they would be where Schalke is, in sort of 13th place, just a point behind Schalke, and looking very pretty to avoid relegation, as they did last season when Alias Schwarz came in and they won 5 of their last 6 to avoid relegation. So Hertha at the Olympiastadion is a really tough proposition. Teams are finding out the hard way that it's difficult to win there. And, you know, it's crazy. Like, they've only won 7 times there, but they've only lost on 3 occasions, which has been the way. But they've scored 39 goals, Hertha, at home this season. And the next closest is St. Pauli and Hamburg with 31. Oh, sorry, Karlsruhe with 36. Another really good home team. We'll talk about them later on. Yeah, it was the usual suspects. You know, Riiza was great. Obviously, Pauko Dardai had probably his best game of the season, scoring the brace. I don't think he would have been too thrilled that his dad took him off on the verge of a hat-trick. But, you know, maybe a case of save the legs. Winkler was good. He had 2 assists in the game. But yeah, look, it was a pretty comprehensive performance for Hertha, who, yeah, going into next season, there's going to be a lot of question marks. But, you know, they've got 5 games remaining. They're at Karlsruhe in the fan friendship game, which actually can be a really interesting game because both teams are very strong offensively. Then Hannover at home, that'll be a World Feed game. Then Elversberg, Kaiserslautern, Osnabrück to end the season. For Rostock, it's just one of those games where nothing really came together. They really struggled to get things going offensively. They gave up some seriously good chances. And if you look at the shot map, which I've just got in front of me, only 3 of their shots, 3 of the 16 shots they had were from outside the box. I mean, it's hard to win games when you're giving up quality opportunities in prime real estate. And it's not exactly like they were all angled shots. A lot of them are near the penalty spot. It's hard to win games when you're giving up those kinds of opportunities. And Hertha were all too happy to take them. And as a result, they take another 3 points, and it looks like they're going to have a pretty decent end to the season. The talk, of course, at the start of the season was, it's not promotion as much as promotion would be great. It's all about building the foundations for the next year or two, 2 to 3 years, and then in that period, that 3 year period, try and gain promotion. But a very good win for Hertha. Hansa's next game is against Magdeburg. It's a massive game for them, but it's a tough run home. They've got St. Pauli and Karlsruhe, Schalke away, and then Paderborn to end the season. So, like, they're going to have to win maybe two of those games. 7 points is what they'll be looking for out of the next 5. It's going to be a big ask, though. It is a tough schedule for them, but we'll have to wait and see. Look, they'll want to take their points at home. That's where they seem a bit more comfortable in front of that hostile environment. So, yeah, it will be a difficult one for them. Let's talk about Kaiserslautern. They made the journey to Fürth. This was the other Friday night game. Just over 15,500 at the Sportpark Ronhof Thomas Sommer. Fascinating game. Really was. Kaiserslautern opened the scoring early through Ragnar Ake. He's got 16 goals this season. He's had a fantastic season. It was a turgid. It was like a really cagey game. Like, good opportunities were really difficult to come by. Look, Robin Himmelmann had like this really good save in the first half, but Fürth always felt like the better team. They had more of more of the ball doesn't constitute being better. But the quality of the chances they were able to produce seemed decent enough. They equalized after halftime through Robert Wagner. Decent finish and a very good individual goal. And as the game progressed, it became a game of chicken in the sense of who wants to go and win the game, because both teams really needed it. Fürth, just as a confidence boosting victory. And of course, Kaiserslautern, who are trying to really avoid the 1996 issue. But unfortunately, they couldn't do it. Because in stoppage time, with basically the last kick of the game, Branimir Hagoda found Wagner again for his second goal, and Fürth with an important win. It's been a difficult stretch for them. As a team that has actually got one of the best home records in the division, they've won 9 of their 15 games at home. That's 30 points. It's only 2 points less than St. Pauli, who have the best home record in the Zweite Bundesliga. But an important win for them. If you look at, like, since February, they've only now won twice. The 2-1 win in the Franconia derby against Nuremberg. But they've had some pretty horrible losses. The 4-0 to Karlsruhe, followed up by the 4-1 away at home to Elversberg. They've been in some contests, like the game against Hertha and Hanover and even St. Pauli, 3-2, 1-2, 2-1 results. So it's a big win for them. Just as a confidence standpoint, it puts them on 42 points. For me, they're safe. I don't think they are at threat anymore of being relegated. So that's massive. Wagner was fantastic in midfield. Jermaine Konsbruch, who was playing alongside him, had a pretty decent game as well. But they certainly looked a lot better up top. The balance looked a bit better with Lempele. Lempele looked pretty sharp in the second half, coming on as a halftime sub. But it's a big result for them. For Fürth, and look, they'll look to try and end the season in the similar manner to the way they started it, which was actually the way the middle of the season, I should say, the November, where they were really strong. So we'll see, but very good result. Some tough games. Fortuna Düsseldorf in the mix, and then they play teams that have all got something to play for in Wiesbaden, Braunschweig, Magdeburg, and then at home to Schalke to end the season. So some important ones. It's really hard to get away for Kaiserslautern, away from the 96 stuff. They are really in trouble. Like, Ake, 16 goals for him this season. It's been a great return for what they invested in him. And he showed glimpses at Fürth last season, but he's really benefited. And even though he's missed a ton of games due to injury, their next month, like the run home, they play three teams that are in the relegation battle. They play the league leaders, and they've got Hertha as well. I just don't understand where they're at. Defensively, they are just... Yeah. And I don't know why... Like, I appreciated that finally Funkel decided to go for it a little bit and try and win the game. They've got all these, like, really talented players, and he just doesn't play them. Like Simakala, for example. I really like Simakala, but it just hasn't worked out this season. But yeah, defense, big problem. They've only had one clean sheet all season. Jesus. And that was the 3-0 away win against Rostock. But look, you know, three defeats on the bounce. Look, it's obviously been a pretty tough stretch. They had Hanover, Dusseldorf, and Hamburg. So that's behind them. But it is a tough run. Like, Wiesbaden are very strong defensively. Kiel are just one of the best defensive teams in the division. Magdeburg, that would be... It's a massive game. It's the top game. A really good opportunity. Hertha and then Braunschweig to end the season. There's no real easy game for them. And they can't get caught up with the idea of, like, oh, we've got the cup final. Well, the cup final was a week after match day 34. Maybe focus on those five games you got remaining. They're a bit more important, and either try and make the playoff or more importantly, try and survive. But yeah, they're one of those teams that if you take pieces away, like one piece away, and it just falls. The Jenga tower falls, and yeah, they've got a few of those players, guys like Ritter, Ake in particular. And if you're forward thinking and seeing what could happen next season, though, if Kaiserslautern go down, those two in particular are probably the ones that you're looking at to replace. Let's head to Paderborn. We'll quickly just run through this one. 1-1 your final against Karlsruhe. Arcelo Conte opened the scoring. Pretty good at fast break move. For Paderborn, got Conte with a through ball, and he finished past Patrick Drevers, but the lead lasted all but 5 minutes. Matanovic, just really good in the moment, sent Pelle Boivinkinter all sorts, and goal skis for him. He's got 12 goals this season, and you could see a team, you know, I think Karlsruhe would love to keep him. He returns to Frankfurt at the end of the season. But it'll be a tough one. You know, I think Frankfurt, if they were looking to sell, would want a decent-ish fee, maybe a couple of million. I think this season has been a big coming-out party for him, and it's really been impressive. And, you know, he's played, I think it's U21 football for Croatia. So he's absolutely been... a lot more active. Yeah, U21 football since, yep. So, you know, he was, I should say. He's 21 now. But, yeah, it's going to be a tricky one. I think there are definitely some teams, whether it's a team like, even St. Pauli could use him next season. Kiel, if there was a team going down from, like a Darmstadt or Köln could use someone like Matanovic for next season. But yeah, he's just got really good instincts. I mean, 12 goals from 27 appearances. Yeah, he's been in the starting 11 on 81% of those occasions. Just does a really good knack for it. It's taken him a while. Like, when he kind of hit the scene, it was pretty, like, raw. His talent... then he came back to St. They went back to St. Pauli on loan. And he just those two seasons and a half just didn't work. So the change of scenery is actually really good for him. to come to Christian Eichner, and again, you know, he's done a pretty good job, Eichner, with certain young players. And yeah, I mean, I get for both these teams they'll be in the Zweite Bundesliga next season, most likely. It is going to be an interesting test for Paderborn. Like, they're winless in the last five. It's clear they probably need a few more pieces if they've got the budget to do so for next season. There are probably several players in the league that could really fit what Lukas Kwasniak wants to build. But they really need to work. I think defensively is their biggest Achilles heel at the moment. They've had a few games where they just kind of completely self-destruct on the defensive structure, and that was probably more evident in the game against Hertha, but here it just seemed like a pretty soft goal to give up. Credit Matanovic, was a fantastic goal for him, but defensively probably not one of the best works for Paderborn. So the run home for both these teams, Paderborn have got Nuremberg, Elversberg, Hanover, Hamburger SV, and I think it's Rostock. Yeah, it should be Rostock, but it's not a world feed game. So that is a manageable end of the season. There are some tricky games in there, especially the game at Hanover. And Hamburg, both those teams might have something to play for, and Rostock away. You know, that could be a big game for Hansa as well, so they could play party people. But for Karlsruhe, Hertha, then Nuremberg, Hansa Rostock, Hanover, and Elversberg. They're going to play a few teams that mightn't have anything to play for by the time they get to them, excluding probably Rostock. So it'll be essentially it's about finishing off the season strong, and hopefully we can see Lars Stindl end his career on a high point for KRC. That's it. Thank you for your patience. I had to get my voice back after things that happened in Leverkusen and of course in Gelsenkirchen. The podcast will be back next week. Thanks for the support. Thank you for your patience, and I hope everyone has a fantastic week, enjoys their weekend of Zweite Bundesliga football, and I'll see you next time when the Zweite Bundesliga returns.